So, prerequisites for Linux. And over here, things had been updated completely now for the new databases. Clustered environments, PostgreSQL databases. This is for enterprise clusters, and then the admin guide will have something. So, what you're looking for, which ports we're using for the conversation now, right?
Yeah, which ports and potentially the article that I have that I've been going off of has it has the ports and it says the new packages
But
that
doesn't
are
say which
required.
ones. Oh, yeah, these are the two from the release guide. So the release guide have the two packages required. If you look, it's a couple of lines into the note over there. There are just two of them.
Okay.
If you are coming from a new enough version of MariaDB, so if you're in the last 3 months, we already updated before the PostgreSQL requirement. But if you're coming from a lot older, they're in there. But basically, if you look at the screen over here on the requirement for installing on Linux, those are the ones that we require. And the two that are really required for PostgreSQL are these guys. The libxml2 and the libxslt.
Gotcha.
So what happened when we dropped the September release is that we updated the admin guide and the install guide to be for the September release specifically now. Although in a couple of places there are notes if you're on older versions, you need to do that and so on. So see how for the US user root, for example, now we have this line for the PostgreSQL requires a new non-root user. This is also in the release notes. So if you're starting brand new, you will already know that. But if you're coming from an old one, that's why it's in the update. Make sense?
Okay. And then on a semi-related note, one of the ports that's no longer required is the 444 port.
Between the two servers only.
What was that? Oh,
Only
between the
between,
two servers.
yeah,
Gotcha.
you still need it to run because that's where your admin UI runs. But back in the day, we're using it for the servlet. Remember at the beginning of the call when I was explaining how we exchange information through the RMI and the servlet? That was the port used for that.
Okay, gotcha.
So
Thank you.
that's why it dropped. But you still need the port itself. And if you go at the very first page on the documentation, there is a very nice checklist of all the ports you need. That's where I started. So if you go to docsaxway.com, MFT products, secure transport, there's a checklist with the ports. It basically lists everything you need. So we don't drop any port per se. We actually need to add ports, but we don't need the 444 or 844 or whatever you're using for the admin UI to be open between the nodes because the two admins don't talk to each other anymore. They just talk through their databases. That's the big difference.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. So the one port that is not in use anymore is the one down on, if you are down on the server, there was another port called 4443 or something like that. That's the one we don't need anymore. The TM communication, the two TMs talking to each other. The RMI port. That's the one that drops, but not the 444. Make sense?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. I'm seeing a raised hand. Jean?
Good morning. Along that line, the document that you just, I've been going through the getting started guide because we're installing net new to our
Yep.
dev servers now. What was the document that you just mentioned that lists all the ports? Because I've been trying to go through and get all my ports so I can get my firewall guys to open them. And
Okay.
I've just run into yet another port that I did not have.
Okay. So go
It's a
to,
little frustrating.
yeah. Can you see my screen? So
I
from the
can.
docs portal, manage file transfer, secure transport. Getting started. and start working with the initial configuration. And over here, there is a checklist. And over here are a gazillion and 17 ports for different things. Now.
Okay. Do you see seven? The one we just ran into now is 7475.
Oh, this and, one. We know about that one.
You do? I didn't.
AC and someone else, 7475, right?
Yeah. And it's in the admin guide I just found. So I found a whole lot of ports, but is there a place that will list everything I need to begin with? Because it certainly wasn't fully in the getting started guide.
Yeah, we have a workbook, and I don't know if it's not public though. When PSO are doing installs, we have our workbook where we basically send it over. I am not sure what happens when someone tries on their own. Let me take a note and I'll check and I'll get back to you. So the answer is we know the information. I don't know if it's somewhere on a public place, so I just need to check. Okay.
Thank you. I'll let Byron know that too, by the way, so we can maybe get PSO, because this is frustrating.
Drop me a note if you don't hear from me in the next couple of days, if I get distracted or if people don't respond to me and I forget to chase them.
I sure will.
I know that we have the workbook because we were just reviewing it, and I'm pretty sure we have the list somewhere in a public place as well. I just cannot, it's probably somewhere on the support site. I just need to dig it out, and I don't want to spend half the code digging out. And worst case scenario, I'll just send you the workbook anyway.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay, but let me also verify internally and see what we want to do with that. That's the more important part. So, but yes, and there is also a couple of high ports that are not listed there. They're in the 9,000 range, 9,600 something or another. You're still going to install with Oracle, right?
Correct.
Yeah, there are a couple over there for the caches that we're using for the caching that are the range for the cache that also get missed occasionally. So ping me, I'll get you the complete set of ports, and then we'll figure out how to get that published somewhere.
Perfect. I'll email you now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, what else do we have? No? Okay, had anyone been playing with the new route packages by any chance?
Hey, Annie.
Hey.
Hiya, not related to what you've literally just said, but I was just trying to find the unmute button at the time. We're on 5.5, but we're on a much older patch level. We're still in 2022, so we're quite behind the times in that respect. But we're seeing issues with when we hit the file tracking button to look at the file tracking log. It can take sort of like 20 seconds or so. Sometimes a bit more to actually come back with the results, but the server log most instant.
Yes. How? So, couple of questions. What kind of database do you have?
It's an external SQL database.
Okay. How many days do you keep in the tracking table?
So, in the file tracking, we got 90 days.
90? 90?
Yeah, 90.
How many files do you have per day?
Not that many, considering what some of these guys on here probably do. I think we... Well, per month, it's about 500,000. So it's not actually that many per day.
So, So your problem is that you're keeping too many days. So the way our this database, the file tracking database, is not really designed to keep a lot of information in, and because of the way we're doing our indexing and so on based on the days, with 90 days in, it's that's part of your problem. So you have about 1.5 million records, which is not that many. But even on that volume, I would start with lowering the days a little bit, honestly. You can also see how much memory do you have in the admin UI?
I don't know off the top of my head on that one. I know it's in the configuration, but off the top of my head, I'm not sure.
Yeah, get it up at least up to 4 gigabytes, if not higher, 4 to 6. See if that helps a little bit. But with that number of days kept in the database, the tracking table will always be slower than usual. It's just we're not optimized. Our advice is no more than 30 days. 45 for very small environments, yours will qualify in a way. So it's not just the number of records. So because based on the number of records, I'm okay with you keeping almost 90, right? With the 1.5 mil, that's not a problem usually, but it's just not optimized for going through that many days and months because of how it's done behind the scenes. And the other thing is, and you'll know I'll say that, update your server. We had been doing a lot of work on this table, optimizing it. So the newer version should work a little faster. But still, I would strongly recommend not to keep 90 days.
Okay. All right. That's really helpful. Thank you, Annie. So one of the reasons we felt the need to have that number of days is because we sometimes have our external users coming in and asking us questions, which can sometimes mean that we need to look at the data older than 30 days old to do some analysis work and stuff.
Well,
so one of the things that we are looking at doing is the possibility of sending our logs to Splunk and doing some analysis there rather than just keeping it in the database. Is that like a sort of a thing that you'd recommend rather than keeping it all in the database?
So the tracking table is not really logs, it's data objects. So sending the tracking data to Splunk will not be automatic. You can send the server logs to Splunk without trouble. But if you want to send the tracking table data, you'll need to first read it somehow. One of the ways through the APIs. Another way is to look at Sentinel, our other server, the one that is basically can keep tracking records for as long as you want. It's basically designed for that. And we have the new event router that now can send to Kafka, and they're also looking at other options where it can send, so that maybe downstream that will be the next option. But yes, short term, if you create something that consumes the tracking table and copies it to Splunk or sends it to Splunk, that might be the cleanest way to do it for now.
Is it possible to, because I know through the log4j configuration, we can write the file. Is it possible to write the file tracking to a file and then have Splunk ingest that?
Nope. What kind of information do they usually look for?
It's when they're looking for issues that they may have had submitting files to us. And sometimes they're very delayed in asking these questions, which is frustrating for us, but we have to deal with it because we kind of like supply a service to them. So.
Okay. Well, as I said, you might want to look through the transfers API that will allow you to export the tracking table in a JSON format. Or you can just export the tracking table in an Excel format directly from the UI, especially with your number of records. And then this information can be saved somewhere, or you can parse it and send it somewhere daily, for example. So, for example, keep the last 30 days in the database, and then for the last 5 days, just parse the information and send it to Splunk or another database or somewhere out of ST, out of the operational days ST. That might be your cleanest way, maybe.
Okay, so log4j is not an option.
No, it's not a log4j log. That's the problem. It's not a log file at all. We call it a transfer log, but that's deceiving.
Right. Yes, that's probably where our confusion is then. That's lovely. All right. Thank you, Annie.
Yeah, and are you on-prem or are you in? Oh, you're on-prem with this version.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
Do you have entitlement for Sentinel by any chance?
it's something that I think we've kind of looked at before. I'd love to expand our Axway products, but I'm sort of limited with budget and stuff like that. So I'm not sure that would be an option.
Well, maybe not short term, but I would say look at it again if you want to, because it's exactly for this kind of scenarios, because it can keep it. It's essentially a huge database that you can send all the tracking information you need goals in real time, and you can get all the information even years later if need be. So that, and I'm, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that's the only option. I'm just mentioning that that's part of the reason why we will never redesign tracking table to hold that much information, is because our policy is for the longer term, go Sentinel or something else, go out. But we're also working on a couple of connectors to the event router so that we can actually push to other engines, not just ours. But we're not there yet.
Hey, Annie, okay. Are people still writing out to the X4 log?
We are. That's why I asked what kind of information he needs. The problem with X4 log is that it's not connected. So you can see the inbound and you can see the outbound, but there is nothing to tell you what belongs to what.
We use that in Splunk a lot, and so if you're just looking to see if you're, for folks that call us after, you know, our 45 days, we have to go look in Splunk for their file names, and we'll be able to see if it was delivered or not.
Yeah.
But you're right, I won't get any, well, there was a PGP decryption error or, you know, something like that.
No, but if it is just about did I got the file or not, Gene is right. So, Matthew, if you look on the OS level, there is another file called X4Log. It lives on all servers and all edges.
Yeah, I found that because I thought that might actually be our answer a while ago. But looking in that log, it didn't seem to show everything that we might actually be looking for. I get the point of it being there and some of the data that's held in it, but it didn't seem to have everything that the file tracking screen would show.
No, it doesn't. What it does is basically just the transfer itself. So it tells you a file called Annie arrived from this IP on this date on this protocol, but it doesn't tell you if Annie originated the transfer or if the file was pulled from Annie. So it's just a pure transfer log. So, but, and Gene is bringing it up, and I was getting there as well at some point, maybe, or I discarded it, but Gene is right, well, I should have brought it up. It actually is easy enough to send to Splunk, especially because it's a rotating file, so it rotates overnight, so you can send yesterday's logs cleanly, because they're outside of... Even if it doesn't give you everything, at least it gives you the... Hey, how many files did this user send on this date? Things like that will actually be there. It will not tell you what happened to the files for the most part, but at least you can get the basic curious, did you get my file on Tuesday? Things like that.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's something that we might need to take another look at and sort of compare that with the kind of requests and questions that we get from our external users. See if we can answer them from the stuff that's in there. But thank you. And thank you, Gene, for your answers.
And it's not all or nothing. You know, you can always, because you're a service, you can always basically tell them if you're 40 days or later, all you can tell you is if we got the file or at least temporary. And then if you are exporting your server logs or if they're on file system, once you find The way I usually work in these cases, if I need to do something like that, I'll hit the X4 log first to see if the file is there and at what time, because that gives you a timeline of when to look into the server log exports or server log files, right?
Yeah.
Those timeframes are important. And especially with the newer versions, when you get to the civilized versions of S3, aka 2024, I had to say that. But we updated our X4 log rights, so you can we actually built a second X4 log as well for the TM specifically with a little bit more details, including thread IDs and stuff like that, to make it easier to match into server logs. So once you update to a newer server, you can actually weaponize your expert lock a lot better. The old one is still there, but we also added more fields for the TM-driven one.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, look out for that on the later versions.
Yeah, which will make it easier then to match to server locks that you also probably are sending somewhere, or at least you are hiving somewhere. So it's looking for old information will always be a problem, no matter what. But and again, if all the problem you have is that the database is just a little bit slow, though, so that's another thing I was going to ask you. When you are looking for this anything, is it always slow, or is it only for if you're looking for a specific date range or specific file name?
It seems to be always, and no matter what kind of filtering we put on it, every time we refresh, it seems to take the same amount of time. It's quite, it is, tw 10, 20, 25 seconds, something like that, to come back.
So as I said, first of all, get some more memory into it. Another test to do is run it with a query that covers a single day. So run something with give me all the files that are in the last hour or that are something like that, always that is inside of the same day, because we're splitting the logs per day. So whenever we are crossing days is when everything will get slow. And the generic query that doesn't check, that just says give me everything, you know. But that's one thing. But as I said, 90 days is usually a bit too much. You're not over on the records, because that's about when I tell people to start thinking to Tim. So if all you have is 1.5 million, you should be general. Yes and no. Because if you have 1.5 million records, you probably have about double that lines. So 3 million lines is a little, it's about twice as I like to see in this tracking table. So.
Cool. That's lovely. Thanks, Annie.
Okay. Good luck figuring it out. And again, update at some point because there were some improvements that will help you, but also explore outside of the tracking table.
Yeah, that was going to be like another question, but I wanted other people to have a chance to answer a question before I asked that one. It was just about the path to update from our version and what we should expect and stuff.
Okay, so the short version is the officially we test up to 12 months. So you cannot jump more than 12 months on a single update, so you need to do updates, intermediate update to get to where we are. However, support had been testing some other paths occasionally. So with as old as you are, as your release is, I would strongly recommend just open a ticket to support and ask them for a recommended path.
Yeah, that's. I think that's probably the best way to go for us at the moment. So yeah, cool. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, because if they someday have R&D behind the scenes, so R&D might have a better idea. They know which builds to skip here and there, right? But be prepared for a multiple update. The good news is that the updates are fast. The bad news is that you got you said you have enterprise cluster, right? Yeah, but you have edges. So don't forget that September you will update the edges to the new database as well. So the September release on the edges, the September update on the edges or later will be a little slower. So you
Okay,
need to
that's
account for
September
that.
24, right? That's
Sorry?
September 24.
Four, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Cool. Thanks, Dave.
Absolutely. Okay, Edie, TM'd graceful shutdown. Yay, my favorite topic. We fixed that. So Edie is asking, can we talk about the transaction manager graceful shutdown and what happens? So graceful shutdown was built 5 years ago or more as our first attempt at zero downtime. It was done very stupidly. It was essentially tell TM that it is going to shut down in 30 minutes. So we stop receiving new connections or new jobs. And then exactly 30 minutes later, even if something is still running, we'll shut down, but we can shut down earlier if something is still going, which was a pain in the behind because if you had a 3 hours long transfer, it was cut in the middle. So when we started working on ZDO this year or last year, they realized that, yeah, we need to fix that. So the new graceful shutdown is actually intelligent. When you start the Graceful shutdown, the transaction manager stops receiving new jobs from its protocols and stops picking jobs from the database. However, any job already in the transaction manager is going to be completed before we shut down. So if you have a push or a pull going on, that might take 3 more days to finish because you're running a terabyte file from somewhere weird. It will still, this TM will keep jugging and working only on this specific transfer until it finishes completely. If it fails for some reason, it will not restart. It will put it in the database and it will consider it finished. If it finishes, the processing itself will be thrown to the database and it will be sent forever. So it's just the current operation that needs to finish. If we're in the middle of a advanced routing that has PGP followed by zip followed by push or whatever, it will do the whole advanced routing part and then finish the process so it can close the advanced routing. As we know, when you go into deliveries, if depending on the scenario, that might mean waiting them out as well, including all of the retries. If the retries are inside of a route, obviously we'll need to wait them out, so these retries will run. But the idea of the graceful shutdown is that it allows the server to finish what it had started without interruptions. And this means if a file is coming from an end user and they're uploading or downloading, we're not going to cut it. Make sense, Edie?
Yes. It's a couple follow-ups.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in the event that, say, a folder monitor is hung and you trigger the graceful shutdown, will that hung event prevent the TM from fully shutting down? Or is there like a timeout time clock on those?
It shouldn't, but I can guarantee you no one tested that.
Okay.
I'll be honest here, right? Because getting it to hang is not that easy, so I'm pretty sure no one tested that. In theory, hung objects should be cleaned up sooner or later, and because the TM is not picking up more jobs, it should be timing out all the threads at this point. And because it is in a shutdown, it should have passed the folder monitor and scheduler control. If it is the first server, the one that was holding the folder monitor and scheduler services, they should have, during a shutdown, the moment when this is shut, those two services should have flown to another server in the cluster anyway. So that in theory should be enough to actually resolve the deadlock.
Okay, and if that scenario does exist, it actually should show up in the event queue, and we should be able to kill it in that portion. Is that, am I thinking correctly?
So if it is in the event queue, it's not being processed at the moment. So the event queue has the waiting list. What is waiting? So the moment when you do the graceful shutdown, you're telling this TM, stop picking up from the event queue. So it can still write to the event queue. So if something happens, for example, it gets the file that needs processing, it will put the incoming end into the event queue, but it will not pick it up again because it knows not to. But if an event is already taken by a database, technically you will not see it in the event queue. It's in the memories.
Okay.
And there are a couple of exceptions, of course. But for the case we are talking about, that's basically, it's the hanging is not really an event. It's basically the folder monitor service itself. And my guess, and again, haven't been tested, and I don't know how to test it to even confirm, but I would expect that the pure process of switching the services into the other node will be enough to resolve the problem. Because for all intents and purposes, it looks like this TM just shut down.
Oh, okay. Okay, we had an issue that came up when we applied our the July patch to our production, and there were things in the logs, errors in the, or no, actually there were warns in the logs that we did not see in our stage environment when we upgraded. Although our stage environment is not a, not even close to being as busy as our production. And some of them, there were like 9 events that talked about a heartbeat is missing. And that kept writing in the TM log like every 10 seconds. And then there was also a poll tried to initiate, but it said that it was still in process and we'll wait for the next schedule. But that never did clear up. So that just kept writing. I think we went in there manually and fixed a couple of them. And so I was thinking that if we used the graceful shutdown, those events that were still pending or got caught in that would resolve that. Do you think that that assessment is true?
Don't know.
Okay.
Because I don't know the root cause. So the ones right. that were telling you that the pool is waiting for the next attempt, this one will be the event queue. So for this one, you could have found it and killed it from the event queue.
Okay. Okay. And so that being the case, so if I do a graceful shutdown on one node, I should be able to look in the event queue, and if there's anything in there, will I be able to delete them having the TM service offline?
The TM service offline, yes, because you still have the admin service, but right. don't forget that the queue is shared between the nodes. So as long as the other TM is still running, there will be events in that queue. And you don't want to kill those.
Okay. Okay, but, so kind of our... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, if you think that you don't have anything pending, so you don't have any files that are waiting to be pushed and so on, if you shut down all the transaction managers, the event queue should only contain things that are supposed to be there. For example, file arrived but didn't get processed or retries waiting. Okay. Anything that you don't expect can be cleaned. So you don't need a running TM to clean the event queue because the event queue itself is in the database and the admin UI actually goes directly into the database for it. The TM is the reader and the writer, but the queue itself is a database table.
Okay.
So you don't need a TM.
So it sounds like when I patch, I should gracefully shut down the TM on one node. Once that's completed, shut down the TM, the graceful shut down on the second node, and then look in the event queue if there's anything in there, delete those things, and then go to the server itself
ED, if you do that and if the last operation that happens is a file arriving, the processing will not happen because you'll delete it. So I wouldn't do it that way. Okay. I understand where you're coming from, and I know that something got really weird. The idea of the graceful shutdown, it was built specifically for the zero downtime update so that we can do the rolling update, right? In your case, what I would do is just shut down one of the TMs together if you're not going to do a ZDO, and just do the regular update. So in July shouldn't happen, let's say it like that. And if you decide to do it with a graceful shutdown, don't forget that when a file arrives with the graceful shutdown, we will throw an event into the database that says this file need processing and will shut down because we finished the arrival part, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you delete it, this file will never get processed. So it will remain in progress in your tracking table forever. And it will just sit on the file system. And there is nothing to be done for this file except someone to re-upload it. That's why I don't want to go and say, go delete everything in the tracking. Because the event queue is supposed to have events at all times. This is the list of things that still need to happen. If you have a long retry that is on the waiting list, it will also disappear. So things like that. Mm-hmm. But once it starts, if you have a subscription that is complaining that it's waiting for the next attempt, this is what you need to get the ID. and go find it in the tracking in the event queue, and then you can queue it from there manually.
Okay.
More of a, you know, surgical strike than just taking out everything, just because otherwise things go weird.
Okay.
Now, if you have the time, what I like doing during updates is if you're going to take an outage anyway, shut down all of the, so I would shut down the scheduler and inbound ports about 5 minutes before I start. This will kill all new files coming in. And you can also kill the folder monitor at this point, so that you leave the TMs to just finish whatever files are in the system at the moment. And then you can monitor the event queue to see what is still there before the final stop. So if you're worried about stuck jobs, that's what I would do more than going with the graceful shutdown for now.
Oh, that's a great, that is a great strategy. I'm going to adopt that into my process. Yeah.
Just kill, if you have an hour time, you might as well, while you're preparing, just kill everyone in the first 10 minutes so that ST can still work these 10 minutes, finish whatever it had started, but kill all inbound files earlier. That's cleaner. And basically, yeah. That's what the new TM fix. Aaron, which of them? I'm sorry. I'm looking at the chat window. So, yeah. And again, what you see in July doesn't really... doesn't really make a lot of Aaron, we had historically TM with a lot of issues. The latest build are better. If you're talking about the graceful shutdown, we had been releasing different updates for it throughout 24, with the latest one coming in June, I think, or May, something like that.
Okay.
So
just a follow-up question. So
yeah,
when I turn the scheduler off, anything that is already inactive won't be affected, right? Because it's already triggered. So it wouldn't. Okay. All right.
So all you're doing when you turn off the scheduler and the folder monitor is you stop the service from going and checking if there is something to run new. Anything that already, so if you have 30 files that were supposed to be pulled at 1 p.m. and you shut it down at 1:05 or 1:02, if they are already in the event queue, they will get executed. So if the event was thrown, we'll finish it, but we will not run it again. So if you shut it down at 1:05 and you have something running every 5 minutes, the 1:05 will be skipped because you are down.
So okay.
Just... I don't know. I just find that to be a little bit more manual, maybe, because what the graceful shutdown is exactly that, except that it won't even pick new jobs from the event queue while I want it to pick up the additional job. So if the file had arrived, I wanted to finish processing it, right? While the graceful shutdown is just finishing the current process. See where the difference is, right?
Yes. Yes.
So and that's one way, especially if your DNS people are doing something anyway. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, you can test it and play with that, but most of the updates I always do, I always will do it that way. I'll cut external access early. I'll make sure my folder monitor and my scheduler stop picking up new files for a while, you know, especially if I'm in a maintenance window. But so one thing to be careful about, TD, is if the maintenance window is because of networking, your outbounds will not succeed anyway, because they'll probably cut you out. At this point, graceful shutdown is a better idea. So, you know, or just shut it down. But the point is, there is a lot of ways to skin that cat. But if just cleaning the event queue completely, you'll lose processing. That's the problem.
Right. Yeah, I understand that. I see.
So one thing I like doing, the other thing is look at the tracking table. If nothing is in progress, then look in the event queue. If the event queue is empty and the tracking table doesn't have anything in progress, nothing is going on this server. You can shut it down. But how often does it happen to any of us? Almost never, right? There is almost always something in the event queue waiting.
Yeah. So, yeah, and one of the for the environment that I'm talking about, we have a lot of folder monitors. We're a Windows shop, and so but if I turn, I can see if I turn the folder monitor off, then it will stop all all new. So this is a good strategy. Thank you.
And it's just the service that doesn't stop it from actually pulling the files in. It's just stopping the service that is going out and looking for new files. So. Right. Okay. And once you start it again, it will process whatever else remains. So even if something was just marked but not put in the tracking table, in the event queue, it will still pick them up on when you start it again. So okay. I don't know. I mean, test it a little bit more, obviously.
Yeah.
Yes. But I generally much prefer that as an option. Graceful shutdown is great when you do ZDO because you'll never stop. But if you're stopping anyway, cutting in inbounds before outbounds and processing makes a lot more sense to me. I don't know. Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Good. And we managed to get to the time. Sorry, Nicole. I was trying. So
don't be sorry.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us. The next one is in 4 weeks, I think, or something like that. And if you are in Chicago, Dallas, or Sacramento, please come see me in person. We're having in-person user groups in all three places in the next couple of months. Thanks, everyone, for joining. I hope this was useful. If you have any follow-up questions in the meantime, please use community or send us a mail or and so on. And Nicole will send you a survey. I know we're annoying, but if you want this to keep happening, we need our bosses to know that everyone likes them and what you think about them. If you have any feedback on the format or anything else, please let us know. And Nicole, back to you.
Yes, given that it's 1 minute after the time scheduled, I won't go through the latest slides that I go through usually about the community portal and what you can get from there, and about the videos on YouTube, and also about the G2 platform, but I will be sharing this presentation, so please have a look at the presentation that will be posted on the article. So thank you all for joining again. And the next one is scheduled early November. I believe it's November 6th, but I'm not so sure if it's 6 or 7. So
I think it's 7.
Oh, 7. Okay. So you should have the way to register, but if you can't find it, please send me an email and I will send you the registration link that is posted on the community portal, by the way. Okay, with that, thank you, Annie. Thank you, customers, and see you soon. Yeah.
Thanks, everyone, and talk to you next time.
Thanks, Annie. Thanks, Nicole.
Bye-bye. Have a great day.
You too.
Great evening.